Hello and welcome back to Podcasts from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. We're on the Financial Mail digital platform, and you can find us on the Apple and Spotify podcast platforms as well. So there are no excuses. As the election here heats up and things become a bit fevered with accusations flying everywhere, lots of hurt feelings and dire warnings, it's really good to find people and talk to people who can keep their cool and keep their distance. That is, without simultaneously losing interest in the whole thing altogether. And my guest today is just such a person. He's calm and he's collected. Well, Yama Mbabane is an old political hand. Born in Cape Town, he joined the ANC in exile when he was just a kid. And he entered the very heart of the organization that has tried to wage a war of liberation against apartheid South Africa. And he survived more than one murderous raid by the security police into our neighboring states. Many people didn't. And he became head of ANC intelligence in Lesotho. No small job. Mbabane knows the ANC absolutely backwards. He studied in the US, and back in democratic South Africa, he's had a really colorful career. I first met him when he was deputy CEO of South African Airways. He's also been chairman at Vodacom, various other companies. A very active guy, always thinking, always theorizing. He knows absolutely everyone, and he's really good company. So, Oyama, thank you so much for joining me. And I know you haven't been well. I hope you're feeling a bit better today. You've just written a lovely, lovely book, Soul of a Nation, A Quest for the Rebirth of South Africa's Values. And if I can just spend 2 seconds on the book, it's like talking to you over a glass of good wine. You know, you chat away, you've got a million stories, and they're all in there. And they're all fascinating and interesting and so well-informed and, you know, just beautifully timed ahead of the May 29 elections. I loved every word of it. But the timing is interesting, almost as if you wanted to jump out onto the runway, you know, at an airport and stop the elections Boeing from taking off. You wanted like a pause, time to think. A new CODESA, you ask for people who don't know what CODESA is. It's the Convention for a Democratic South Africa, which is where the South African Constitution, Democratic Constitution, was hammered out. But Oyama, you say, right at the end of the book, in fact, I urge that we go the route of a broad, inclusive conclave that brings together the best minds in and out of government, academics, civil society, activists, faith communities, unions, business, the youth, and political parties. In a CODESA-like forum, this grouping could ponder and lay out ways and means to avoid the encroaching calamity and possible collapse of our state prefigured in the violence of July 2021. So the question is, I guess, is why another CODESA? What's gone that wrong that we would literally have to start all over again for?
Thanks, PB. Thanks, Peter, for the invitation. And thanks to your listeners for affording me this honor. It is much appreciated. Peter, things are not going well, you know, with our democracy. The health of our democracy is in a parlous state. It's in peril. And in many respects, what happened in July 2021 was a harbinger of what could come from a populace that's become alienated from political participation and even the enterprise of voting itself. I mean, if statistics are to be believed, only 30% or slightly more of eligible voters bothered to turn up in the last two elections. I'm talking about the local government election in 2021 and then the national election in 2019. So clearly, increasingly, a huge part of our population has lost interest in politics and voting as a lever for transformational change. And when that happens, it could actually be kindling, for the type of outburst that we saw in 2021. So I do believe that nations at some point, you know, and I think we've reached that point now, 30 years into our democracy. Isn't it about time we sat together and pondered whether we're going in the right way? The macro social report issued by the very presidency last year show that 70% of our people are not happy with where we are. And this is a report that is issued 16 years after the last one, issued during what it seems now to have been a halcyon moment in our democracy. We didn't appreciate it at the time, and that was the presidency of Thabo Mbeki. You know, I usually call it to people that we actually had Camelot without the symphony. You know, we're not singing on the street. But if you look at all this, at all the stats, it shows that we're a country on the move. If you look at debt to GDP ratio, if you look at the currency, if you look at, you know, all manner of things, including the fact that we had a surplus, the fact that we'd emerged from junk status that apartheid had plunged us in, we were a country on our way. We're a country on the move. We were actually called punching above our weight. And what was our reward, if you like, for that presidency? It was a defenestration of Thabo Mbeki from office and his inclusion by a guy who was not interested in any of the things I've just listed. So that is why, as I say, democracies need to renew themselves by asking these questions. Are we doing well? What is wrong with us? And whatever is going right with us, we need to deepen. And what is not wrong, what is not going well with us, we need to correct, we need to fix. And we don't have to wait for 8 years. You know, the Americans waited 8 years. There was 8 years between the birth of that republic and the Civil War, 1979 to 1960. Maybe my math is incorrect, but it was a long time. And it led to a million Americans perishing because some of the foundational issues about that republic had not been addressed at its founding. It may well be that there are certain things that we did not address as well, you know, in our founding. And those are the questions we can only get answers from through this conclave. You know, it cannot be left to political parties alone. And political participation is not about voting every 5 years. It's an engagement, it's a perennial engagement, you know, as citizens, an engaged citizenry. Does ask for the things it wants. And then the political establishment delivers. As I say, it took the Americans about 8 years, you know, and those problems, as you know, remain. You know, they were not fixed even by the Civil War. I do think to the extent that everyone, including the ANC, the governing party of the last 8 years, admits that something hugely awry, you know, has happened in our republic. I think everybody admits to that. Reports state that eloquently. You know, and I think if we look at all those reports, at party manifestos, what the parties are saying themselves, there is a concession something is not going right with our republic. There is a failure. But this grand inheritance could end up immolated like we saw in 2021.
So, Oyama, I just thought of something as you're talking, and I haven't written a sort of coherent question about it, but, you know, there is a case for arguing that the past 30 years are merely the last 30 years of apartheid itself and colonialism, and that in the sense that, you know, we all complain and we know about the damage done in 200-300 years of colonialism and apartheid. Why would we simply expect it to sort of just end, you know, with an election in 1994? Surely it's reasonable to construe the past 30 years as the last gasps of apartheid, where you have a movement in the ANC, which is created by precisely those elements, colonialism and apartheid. Why would it be anything but a deformed child? You know, given its parentage, perhaps aren't we going through now the moment where, you know, the conditions for a real democracy begin to arise because the bullshit is now out of the way, and you know, we can have a better discussion and a better outcome.
Indeed, that may be the case. That may be the case to me, except that it's belied, you know, by what happened between 1994 and 2007, those 13 years I'm talking about, there was a real, you know, palpable, measurable transformation and change in our country. Our country was in a happier place. The citizens themselves, I mean, if you think about the Springboks' victory in 1995, Bafana's victory in 1996, you saw a country coming together, a country that was beginning to gel. Not to say those problems of the last 300 years had gone away. In fact, I always say to folks who call Madiba and his confederates, you know, sellouts, that the idea of thinking that a devastation that had taken place for 300 years could be changed in 30 years, you know, is wrong. However, as I say, we had a great beginning. We had a great constitution. You had the founding of a republic with its values. We should look at the founding values of our republic. We are seeing now a retreat from those values. Was you're seeing folks now retreating into their tribal lagers, their tribal corners. That cohesion that had begun to form is dissipating. So at that point in time, I do think that the best amongst us need to sit down and say, what is wrong with us and how can we recorrect, you know, our trajectory? And it may well be the answer lies in what you say. But I don't think those questions have been asked, you know, in a conclave of that nature, you know. We're going around as if nothing is happening. I mean, people admit that things are not going right, and you know, but there is no galvanic spirit that say, guys, we need to sit down and reponder the direction of our republic.
Well, it's interesting, though, too. Don't you remember back in the halcyon days of growth and budget surpluses, we were all rather dissatisfied with Thabo Mbeki. He had, you know, he'd earned our disrespect for his approach to AIDS, and he was distant and aloof. We're never satisfied, are we?
Well, that's why I say it was Camelot without a symphony.
Yes. All right. You write in the book about hope, about homecoming, the sort of notion of home. And I was wondering, so you were in exile for a long time. Why is that notion of home and getting it right, why is it so important? And did exile perhaps make home something that perhaps it never was?
Well, you know, when we were, as I say in the book, when we used to talk about going home, it was a beacon that we attracted to home. I mean, that's what happened to exile. And then we get home, you know, and you find that actually we're still not home, if you like, you know. Someone says to me, you know, I still feel I'm in exile. Yes, we came home, but we're still in exile. Because as I say, home is not about just returning to a geographic space. It is returning to a place that palliates the soul, the spirit, lifts you up, engages you with the values of home. And what we've seen is actually a retreat from those values. If you like, a retreat from home. Many of us are feeling exile, you know, these days. In fact, one of the phenomena that few people are talking about is young black professionals are actually leaving this country at an alarming speed. They graduate, it used to be in the past just white young kids. Now black young kids have joined the exodus. So something is happening. People are not feeling at home. So that unhealable rift between a human being and his or her native place, it's happening as we speak. You know, in the past it was physical because we were removed, you know, by apartheid. Now it is happening under the democratic dispensation. So we need to heal our home. And that's what I'm referring to. To make it habitable and inviting again.
So I had some experience of the ANC in exile, and my experience of the people I knew, mainly in London, And of course, we all know the office in London was deeply penetrated by the security police. But my goodness, they were miserable, hey? Those guys. It was a sad, sad thing to go into the ANC office in Penton Street in Islington and to the pub next door. Everybody was sad all the time. And I knew those people over a couple of years. And they seemed so miserable in exile. Were you miserable in exile?
No, I wasn't. You know, I wasn't miserable in exile. I was lucky because I was in what was called the forward areas, you know. And that's what I speak about, you know, in my Lusaka chapter. When Chris Hani says to me, "You're going to see now your organization truly as it is, you know. It's ugly underside. People who've given up on the struggle. The kind of people you're talking about, Peter, who are sad, unhappy, and vindictive, you know. And they don't like your ilk, you know. So if you like, you're going to encounter your organization now afresh. And you may not like what you see." So I was not unhappy in exile because I was in the struggle. I was in the furnace. I was in the vortex of what was happening. I mean, the two massacres I talk about. I mean, you know, you're talking about someone who was engaged, you know. And the enemy was clear to me, to all of us who are in the forward areas. It was our apartheid regime. And we were contending for strategic advantage with each other or against each other every waking hour. Now, that keeps you going.
You had something to do.
That keeps you engaged. Now, you return to... You had something to do, you know? And if you don't do that, you're going to die. It was as simple as that, you know? So, it does foster all manner of coercion and purpose.
You make a point in the book, and I'm going to just quote you at some length here. You say, and we're now talking you back home, and you know, it's not as pretty as... one would have expected. You say, quote, "The ANC, infatuated with its self-importance and vanguardist pieties, made a fatal mistake in making itself the portal for material success as it sought to referee who was up or down in the black economic empowerment game under the guise of creating what we call a patriotic bourgeoisie. In doing so, the ANC made itself ineluctably the actual prize to be captured in the Titanic contest for material success by people who had been excluded from the mainstream of economic activity." Let's assume now, Oyama, that you get your pause, right? You get your CODESA, you get your convention. Let's assume you manage to get the nation round the conference table once more. How would you solve the problem that the ANC wrongly thought it had the answer to? What's the alternative to BEE? What's the alternative to the way things have been done up until now?
Well, I think the ANC now has the wisdom to realize it doesn't have all the answers. Number one. So those vanguardist pieties, I hope, have been eviscerated by experience. Which is why, I mean, I think generally there's an acceptance of this, which is why the ANC has invited business to help with the logistical aspect of congestion, with power outages, and with the criminal justice system. There is a recognition in the ANC that we don't have all the answers. And I think it's at that point, when you don't have all the answers, just like the Nets, really, got exhausted, they knew they could not vanquish us. You know, that's why de Klerk made that speech of February 2nd. It was a confession, you know. But guys, let's come together. Let's see what we can do for our country. And I'm saying the same thing is happening. And it doesn't have to. It's exhausting. And it doesn't have to take another 80 years. We don't have to be like the Popular Revolutionary Party of Mexico. It took 70 years for that party. You know? And by the time, as you say, you're asking me, isn't it too late? 70 years later, it was too late to fix the Mexican polity. I think it's a broken polity, you know? And it took 40 years for the Congress I party to lose power in India. It's not actually healthy for a party to be in power for as long as the ANC has been in power, you know. But our racialized nature of politics will ensure that the ANC, even as malaise and disenchantment grows, the ANC will still win. The ANC is going to win this election. I mean, I hear all these doomsayers saying it's going to go to 39, but it's not going to happen, you know? At the launch, someone asked me, Reddy actually, why are we making the ANC central to everything we say and do about our country? Why are we making the ANC central to our engagement with what this country means? I couldn't answer this question adequately because partly, you know, the Reddy talks, you know, a lot. he does ask the question and then gets an answer. I've got competition, you know. And I would have said to him, and I'm saying it to you now, we're number one because the ANC has been the governing party, you know, for 30 years. And as I say, it's not about to lose power, you know. So it is central to our deliberations about the future of this country. Number two, it's an old part of 112 years. The ANC, if you read about it, has gone through zigs and zags, ups and downs. You know, John Dube was its first president, 2012. By 2014, for all intents and purposes, he had packed his bags and basically left the organization, you know. Somebody else came, Makgato. And then the original founder of the ANC, the person who made the clarion call for the formation of the ANC, Big Slicka Isaka Seme, almost destroyed the ANC in the 30s. Even expelling its past president, Mahabane, you know. Even expelling Makgato, who was his second president. People like Matsike, a lot of the ANC titans, especially here in the Transvaal, you know, as it was called, you know. And it took engagement to remove Seme and replace him with the person he had fired from the organization, that is Mahabane. And ultimately, Mahabane is defeated by Xuma. That's when the ANC, if you like, had a renaissance in the 40s under Xuma. It became a mass movement only in the 40s. But still, you know, the young Texans, the ANC were not happy with Xuma. They thought he was too genteel. He was not militant enough. Remember, this is after the war. The war radicalized political claims, you know, all over the world. So the folks who had formed the Youth League, Mandela, Tambo, Sisulu, you name them, said we need a program of action, a more militant program of action to deal with our situation. Xuma didn't want to listen. And they orchestrated a coup against Xuma, you know. So the ANC goes through this cycle. And I'm saying, it may be too premature for folks to say the ANC is going to die next year, you know. But I don't believe that the ANC cannot rule this country alone. It does not have all the wisdom to do so. And I think it has learned that lesson.
You know, you say you think it has learned the lesson, but there's an interesting aside, isn't there, in what has happened to the failed attempt to sell off control of South African Airways, because now that deal is no longer going ahead, the loudest voices that I hear coming out of the ANC are all saying never again. You know, whoever is going to put, you know, whoever we partner with in this thing, we are going to need 50% plus one share. They're going to be a minority partner. The government is going to run the show. So not everybody's learned the lessons.
No, not all exactly the lesson, but I would argue the most advanced elements the ANC have. And who are those? I'm talking about the Veterans League. You know, these are the old ANC stalwarts. Mavuso Msimang, Snoopy Zikalala, Joel Netshitenze, you name them, you know. And the presidency and the finance minister. The finance minister was at my book launch.
Oh, did it? Oh, really? Oh, lovely.
He didn't just sit there. He participated. Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
We engaged, we jousted, you know.
Yeah.
The governor of the Reserve Bank was at my launch.
Oh, lovely. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, okay. Well,
the governor
of
the Reserve Bank, but he didn't say one word. So there is an increasing number of people who are saying, guys, we need to change course. But as I say, PB, it's not going to come from the ANC, you know. To think that it's going to come from the ANC is like waiting for Godot, you know? We as a citizenry need to push the ANC in that direction. We need social movements who demand the things we need as a country. We did so, frankly, when Zuma was in power, between the firing of Dantla Nene in December 9, 2015, and the election of Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, on the, I think it was the 18th of December. I know it was the day before my mom died, you know. There was civic engagement. And as soon as Cyril was in power, we demobilized again, which is exactly what we did in 1994.
Relax.
We should never do that again.
Yeah.
You know.
So listen, you
should never do that again. We must learn our lessons. So it's,
yeah. Now,
Miss, let me just finish.
Yeah, sure.
It's not just the ANC that is at fault here. It's all of us, PB. Because I can guarantee you, the people were there, and there were maybe over 200 were there at the launch. I say to them, I know all of you, you sit in the dinner table and you complain and you complain and you complain. You barely ache. You bitch and moan, as Americans would say. What are you doing about it? You know? Either, as I say, Mandela and his cohort, 1944, they were young, in their 20s, for goodness sake. They formed the ANC Youth League, and then they challenged a sclerotic ANC leadership, and they took over the movement. I'm saying you could do the same. Take over the ANC and turn it into the party of your desires. Or you can take over the EFF. Because one thing you can say about Malima, whatever you think of him, he's decided to engage in politics. And today he is a factor in our politics. Or Songhezo, who started a new party. I'm disappointed Songhezo doesn't seem to be breaking through. But already said, well, the poor sometimes get things wrong. But I thought you would at least be registering. You would see him at 5%, 3%.
Well, the DA is doing its best to raise his profile at the moment. So maybe he'll get some MPs by the time the voting. Yeah, exactly. So listen, so you wrote this book before Jacob Zuma and Mpontawesizwe, MK, his new party, had emerged as a new force in our politics. What do you make of all of that? I mean, how does that filter through your, how does that work its way through your machine?
Well, in a sense, I mean, Jacob Zuma's support base are the same folks who tried to torch our country in 2021, you know. At least I'm happy that they have a home now. You know, they can at least participate in our politics instead of burning buildings down. So whatever we think about Zuma is giving them, you know, that avenue, you know. And I hope he continues to do that. Now, there is a folk, TB, that is disenchanted with the current political configuration, current political parties, whether it be ANC or DA or actually South Africa, that needed a new home. Zuma has given them that home, you know. And let's see how that pans out. Zuma's, are the polls correctly predicting that Zuma will be getting 10%? I think they are wrong, you know. But even if he gets 5%, you've given those people a home. Just like there's a bunch of folk who believe in the radical type of politics Malima is espousing. I would rather have those people represented in our representative democracy than them not participating and essentially engaging in mayhem, you know. So in the end, Jacob Zuma's entry into our political space certainly has shaken it up. In some respect, it's got made it more interesting. And I hope it doesn't degenerate into violence, because part of the MK party crowd, you know, espouse violence. I mean, I'm happy that they've suspended this boy, Kanyile, because he does seem to believe in violence. But I think it's part of the dynamism that the society needs. Unfortunately, I don't think politics and voting alone address what I'm talking about. I think it's important that we have good political parties, strong political parties, but important that those political parties sit down with the rest of us, journalists, business folk, academics, foundations, think tanks, eminent citizens, to design a future for this country as we did in CODESA.
Yeah, I keep asking myself whether it's too late, you know, because whatever the conditions were then, they don't apply now, and it would be a very different conversation. I keep asking myself what's gone wrong, you know, is it personalities or is it policies? Those may even be the wrong questions. You know, we know what's gone wrong. The government is corrupted, incoherent, incapable. As a lifelong ANC supporter, is that hard for you to hear?
No, it's not hard for me to hear. It's not hard for me to hear. As I say, Peter, sorry, not Peter, Chris Hani warned me and a few people, and he said, guys, not all of us are committed to this project, and you will see it for yourself, you know. I want to repeat that not all of us are committed to the Democratic Project, including some people in the ANC, the Democratic Project. Some don't believe in it, you know. Some believe in strongman rule, and I think Zuma is one of them, you know. Strongman rule, discard the constitution, you have a hard guy. In fact, one guy wrote to me yesterday, very smart dude with a master's in economics from Vic University, and he said, my proposition, my brother, is that we suspend the constitution for a while and go for a Liu Yuan Kwan style, you know, big man rule.
Yeah.
Now, who's going to be that big man rule?
You.
Who's going to be that Yuan Kwan? I asked him.
Yeah.
And he couldn't answer my question. Yes.
Yeah.
The competition that obtained during the struggle. I mean, I talk a lot about spirituality. You know, I talk a lot about music. You know, and I wonder, I mean, even as I wrote this book, I wonder what makes people spiritual. And by spiritual, I don't mean just people going to church. I mean each of us taking care of each other. I think that is a fundamental point of spirituality. Do unto others as you'd want done unto you, you know? That moral marriage with our neighbors, you know, that Spinoza talks about. I'm asking myself, do we have the conditions for that? At least we did during the struggle, because there was an enterprise called the struggle, you know, overcoming our humiliation by apartheid, defeating an iniquitous, you know, regime. The struggle itself became a spiritual enterprise. I mean, I said, once folk transcend the self to say, I'm ready to die, I'm ready to go to prison, I'm ready to go to exile because of my belief. Do we have that same type of esprit de corps in our society? I doubt that we do. And you know, only people, and that's what I'm trying to warn against, that we only discover that only when things are really, really on its knees. You know, like the folks who engaged the regimes during the Arab Spring, and they find that the damage was too hard, too deep to reverse. And I'm warning that if we don't do this thing sooner rather than later, we may find ourselves in a position where, as you say, this has become insuperable. This has become, you know, an
Yeah.
impossibility, you
Yeah.
know.
So, you know, the
Because those conditions are not
yeah.
there. My point is that those conditions are there quietly, PB. There is a slow death of our democracy. When you Over 40% of our people are not employed. When only 30% vote, damn, that tells you something is about to explode.
So the argument that, and I think Songeza makes the argument, Songeza Zibi, that the ANC, you know, South Africa can't be rescued or can't be turned around or saved while the ANC is still in power. You're saying that's not necessarily the case. The ANC has to be part of the solution.
Yeah, I think the ANC is part of the solution, and I'm not saying it should be in power. Those are two different things. Salim Mutlande, who, as you know, was President of this Republic, Secretary General of the ANC, Deputy President of the ANC, has posited that the ANC cannot renew while it's still in power. He's probably saying the same thing as Songezo, you know? And we've seen clearly that Mavuso Msimang was at my launch. And I said there boldly, the renewal has failed. Unless You, Ebrawani, Mavuso, you can correct me. But the renewal has failed, and it probably has failed because of what Kgalema is saying. The ANC is in power, you know. It's difficult for it to transform itself into the party it could be if it could start from where it used to be as a movement. I'm not saying the ANC must be a liberation movement, but at least to have a mission which is to recapture the hearts and souls of South Africans because we give them a better proposition.
So, Oyama, white people are often shocked that the ANC still attracts, you know, the support that it does. And as you're saying, you know, it's still going to come out of this election, having performed so badly for almost a decade, more than a decade, it's still going to come out the biggest party. What is it, do you think, that white people don't appreciate about the way black people approach their politics and their choices?
Well, let me start by saying one thing that is axiomatic. There is no credible black alternative to the ANC. You know, when we had COPE, we could have transformed the politics of this country because we had a credible black alternative to the ANC. I'm sorry, the EFF is not that alternative, you know. Now, given the fact that there is no credible black alternative, this is a black country, you know, people must understand that. Black folk will continue to vote for black parties. And there is a party, PB, that has been around for 12 years. That has gone through zigs and zags, you know, ups and downs, but that has remained. You know, the other parties, if I may, I'm going to count all of them. We talk about the PEC, that was the first breakaway from the party. Friend of that party died with Sobukwe, you know. If you talk about the Black Consciousness Movement, frankly, it died with Steve Biko, you know. People like Bani Pityana, you know, and others, Malusi Mpumlana, you name them, never really became part of what was a political party, which was AZAPO, you know. My father-in-law, maybe you don't know this, my father-in-law was one of the founder members of SASO. He was at school with Biko at the University of Natal, you know. After my mother's funeral, I had a discussion with somebody who says...
No, I was going to ask you who your father-in-law was.
Hello?
Yeah.
Joel Matipa.
Okay.
Yeah, Joel Matipa. Yeah, he's in Toyola's book, he's in Mampila's book, you know?
Yeah.
So I approached him and I said, why don't you guys transform yourself into a party, the Black Consciousness Party, you know? And he says, no, my boy, you missed one thing. Black Consciousness was never a party. It was an idea. It was a cultural idea about infusing Black pride after the catastrophe of Rivonia. And Black Consciousness Movement, in its various incarnations, delivered that. June 16 was a product of a reimagined, or rather, reinvigorated Black pride. These kids said, we're not going to take, you know, the bullshit of, you know, our oppressors now telling us we're going to learn mathematics in Afrikaans. There was a revolt. A revolt founded on Black pride. But beyond that, you know, those kids left the country, many of them. You know, few of them joined the Black Consciousness Party, that is AZAPO, so to speak, or whatever, Black Consciousness Movement of Azania, Exa, the one that Mangena led. They never did.
Yeah.
Most of them had after the ANC, because the ANC seemed to be a credible threat to the apartheid regime. It was better organized thanks to support from the Scandinavian countries, thanks to support from the Soviet Union. So people must understand that part of our difficulty is that even if the ANC misfires, there's frankly no alternative to it. I don't think white folk would actually appreciate black folk, black people voting for Malema. I think they are scared of Malema more than they are scared of the ANC. Given Malema's hoary ideas about all manner of things.
Yeah.
So it's longevity. It is virtually every person I know has something to the ANC. It was their great-grandfather. It was their grandfather. Because for some time, it was the only entity. Halwa Kutlane calls it the parliament of the people. For a people that was disenfranchised, that was, you know, that couldn't vote, their only parliament where they could gather was the African National Congress.
Yeah. So, Oyama, who's going to win the election? Give me the top three parties and a rough estimate of their vote.
I think it's going to be the ANC, between 48% to 52%. I think the lowest, the low mark will be 48%.
Yep.
Followed closely by the DA, I think around the same level of 20%. I think Malima will retain, 11%, at best 15%. Zuma at 5%. And it is my hope that Songeza will also get to 5%.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? And can I be really rude? And you could tell me to bugger off. Okay. I'd be really rude and ask you how you voted in 2019 and whether you'd vote the same way now.
No, I voted in 2019 for Cyril Ramaphosa because he was promising us a renewal, I will not vote the same way, on May 29th, because I do not think the ANC is capable of giving us the renewal we desire. The question is, who do I give my vote to? To Songezo, even if it's, as they say, less than 1%. I told Songezo, by the way, that Songezo, you've got my vote because you chime with who I am. But in the end, I'm not the one who's going to give you the vote. You need to win the black street. That means going toe-to-toe with Mbalula, Malima, and now Jacob Zuma. And that's not Songezo's style, unfortunately. But that's where the votes are, If I may say, PB, the majority party in this country are those who are not voting. More people are not voting than those who are voting.
Yeah, very sad.
Those are the people that need to be won over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how it's...
Can Songezo do that? That's the challenge.
Yeah, maybe it's a longer process than 6 months for someone doing approaching it the way it is. Listen, there was something in the book that I really enjoyed reading about, and it's not central, but while I've got you on here. So during Condesa, I presume, the subject of what sort of form of politics we would have, whether it would be constituencies or proportional representation. And there was constituencies were initially favored because obviously constituencies would be overwhelmingly black. And as you say, black voters vote for black parties. So the ANC would have done extremely well under a constituency system. But you say in the book that actually they chose PR because it gave the party more control, that they wouldn't have had constituencies been the answer. I thought that was a fascinating insight.
Well, this is not... but that was not my view. That was the view of the jurist I was talking to, This is a leading jurist who was part of the Condesa process. That's the person who told me this. The consensus generally at Condesa was we go the constituency route, really influenced by Westminster politics and all of that, But the Nets are the ones who actually divine the fact that it means 80% or thereabout will go to the ANC. And they were able to essentially say, no, we need a proportional representation and all of that. And then the ANC agreed to that. So I asked them, I said, why would the ANC agree to something that actually undercuts its electoral potential? He says, because they are more interested in party control than giving you and me, the individual voter, control. Now, this could be cynical, but that's what he said.
No, it's fascinating.
I've had discussions. I've had discussions with, amongst others, the chief electoral officer, Brigitte Bami. She's my aunt. And she says she was in the first election, she was with Krishna and all of those people, So she shows to me, no, the idea that came from Condesa was that a PR system gives representativity. So even with 1-2%, you can get into parliament, And that was important for a bunch of people that had been disenfranchised for a long time. It was important to have a cacophonous democracy that was representative than an accountable democracy, Now, I'm saying 30 years later, We need, it seems to me, given especially the debacle of Indanda, where clearly the party bosses told the ANC parliamentarians how to vote. Not you and me. We need now a more accountable system. We've seen PR. It had its promise. It had its greatness, rewards. In fact, it's a staple of government, of elections in Western Europe. But it doesn't seem to work very well here. We need a more accountable democracy. And I think 30 years later, that's the whole point of a milestone where we can begin now to revisit decisions that were made 30 years ago. No.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. Oyama, thank you so much. And we move from the cacophony of the current election, perhaps one day, to a more moderated cacophony of a conference table, if you get your way. But thank you so much for coming onto my podcast and for elevating our discussion the way you have. It's been a real treat. And thank you too all for listening. I'll be back next week with another edition. Please take care, and I look forward to us getting together there again. Bye-bye.